Welcome to the Fangled Cast, brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.
Hey, everybody. Right. Welcome back to the Fangled Cast. We're going to have some fun today because we're going to be talking about an area that I have great expertise in, but in a market that I have none. So today we're going to talk to a very good friend of mine who actually I went to college with more than a few years ago in Wilmington. His name is Tim Evans, and he was the marketing director of a very well-known hotel chain that we're going to leave out so we don't get sued for talking about him. He ran the marketing department at a hotel on the Strip in Vegas. And during that time, found out that the hotel had interest in a very niche market and grabbed a hold of it and turned it from an idea into an extremely profitable program for that hotel chain. And I want to talk about that because niche marketing is especially the super niche that you can find, has always been sort of the area of growth in most of the clients I've worked with over the years. So let me have him introduce himself to you, my good friend, Tim Evans.
Yeah, so around 1995, actually, I left the great state of Ohio on a little adventure to Nevada and ended up in Las Vegas and thought, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do here? I have had a background in social services for several years. Tried to get into that here with not much success, very different environment, of course. So I started a temp job at a casino and I thought, yeah, this might work. So I started at Station Casinos as a huge locals casino, and I can use their name out here. So I started there, just started as an entry level person at their players club, actually.
Interesting.
And this through the years was promoted and then transferred to another major gaming company in town. And I was there for about 20 years. And I really learned as I went. I mean, as we talked earlier, I was an English major at Wilmington College. So you think, yeah, what do you do with that? You gamble. Teach, right?
You gamble with it.
Yeah, you teach. You're teaching kids, right? I'm like, yeah. No. But I really fell into marketing and learned as I went. Mm-hmm. And it was just a tremendously rewarding experience.
That's interesting. You know, we did a previous recording with a gentleman who grew up on the Navajo reservation and created his own fashion line. And one of the reasons I had him on was because at some point in time, the question kept coming to me, how does somebody without role models in entrepreneurship get the spark and be successful? And in your case, at what point did you recognize that you could be a star in marketing?
You know, I don't know if I'd call myself a star at all, but I would say that, well, thank you. For me, when you're working for a huge corporation, like I was, there wasn't a lot of opportunity, obviously, for individuality or to be an entrepreneur. But in this case, it was really a market that I saw was untapped. The company had put a toe in the water, so to no pun intended, actually, but a toe in the water into the LGBT market over the years. And I thought, why are we not doing a little bit more with that? So the property I worked at had a huge pool area, as most hotels out here do. And one summer around 2009, I heard on a Sunday we had leased part of our pool deck to some local promoters. I thought, well, I want to go see what they're doing. I heard it was an LGBT event and I walked out and I saw what they were doing. And there were 50, 55 people out there. And I thought, okay. So I went the next week, I wanted to see it again and still 55, 60 people, but I saw the energy there. And so after the season ended, after they had done a few events, our pool director and I started talking and I said, we're onto something here. I said, we should be doing this event. We should be managing this event. We'll hire someone to promote it because we need a face out in the community, but we need to run the event. We need to make it a better event. So 2010, we launched it. We were already advertising in some LGBT publications. So we refocused that a little bit to promote the pool party itself as a real amenity for LGBT, in addition to the rooms and the gaming and the dining. And that first summer, I think a good Sunday for us was probably 100 people. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a DJ, we had a pool, we had some cabanas, that was it. So we had a good year. And, you know, we circled back. I went to the executives the next year and said, here's what we made. Here was the impact in the community. We're getting mm-hmm. some buzz about it. We're getting some social media traction about it. We're getting some PR from it. Let's do it again. So the second season we launched, put a little more finances into it, mm-hmm. Hired some dancers, et cetera. And, you know, the numbers shot up. I think a good day for us that summer was probably 250, maybe 300. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, you know, 10 years of the event, the last season we did it, which was 2019, an average Sunday for us, the event was every Sunday, was about 600.
That's a great number.
Yeah. And, you know, we peaked on holidays with 1,300 people out there. But more than that, it really pushed our property and our company into the community, into the LGBT community. So we became more active with Las Vegas Pride organization. And beyond that, we became an attractive property and an attractive company to other LGBT groups outside of Las Vegas, who brought their meetings, conventions, groups, et cetera, to the property. Only because they had heard about the pool event. And of course they wanted to make sure their event occurred during a week when there was a pool event.
Yeah.
Because that was part of the amenity, right? But yeah, we brought a lot of business beyond just the pool party.
It reminds me, years ago, I went to a corporate event. It was a trade show, and they had hired this famous basketball guy, Magic Johnson, to speak. Yeah. And he had just moved out of he had a Starbucks business. And someone asked, what got you interested in opening all of those Starbucks in underserved neighborhoods?
Yeah.
He said, well, there's one thing that I know. Black people like coffee and they drink it.
Yeah.
I don't know what a scone is, maybe.
Right.
But that's okay, because they can learn, and we made things that fit that market. But he recognized that there were all of these locations that he could open these and make money.
Yeah.
And it worked. The thing that's interesting to me about the work that you did, though, I can imagine, maybe it's my bias, but how much pushback did you get from the actual organization of what damage could that do? Because it's kind of controversial to set up. And
I'm
just curious how that went and how you dealt with it.
Yeah, you know, the first few years, yes, we were under a lot of scrutiny.
Sure.
Of course, we had hotel guests who were upset that the event was going on. We got a few hate letters about it, and a few complaints. I had some executives that were very concerned about it.
Interesting.
And I think, you know, they were also they were biased. I mean, it was what's acceptable on the, let's say, the heterosexual side of the pool, because we still had a massive pool that was open to our hotel guests. So some of the behaviors that were acceptable on the regular side of the pool were not acceptable on the party side of the pool. And I said, well, let me ask you. So someone is upset because two guys were kissing in the pool. Would we ask, if that was happening on the other side of the pool, would you ask those people to leave? Well, no, of course not. Well, then you wouldn't ask these two guys to leave either. So we had a lot of that to overcome. And I would say that really was only the first couple of years. It was funny because the way the pool deck was set up, then one of the big main entrances to the property was from the garage, crossing the street over the pool into the property. And it was a bridge.
Sure.
And during the party, I mean, the bridge was full of people, just hotel guests, just standing there watching what was going on. And that was,
I guess it's less expensive than going to see a show.
Right. And while it was sort of funny, most of the guests at our party thought they took it in stride, but it did bother me a bit that we became, it was almost a spectacle. Mm-hmm. And to me, I said, guys, this isn't what the party is about. It's not about, we're not, this isn't some kind of a freak show or entertainment, like you're saying,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is a group of people. It's a Sunday afternoon. They all have to go back to work tomorrow. They just want to blow off some steam and have fun with their friends.
Yeah.
So we moved the event to the main pool. I think after this year too, we moved it to the main pool. And so that we didn't have quite that much, but I have to say after year two, there was no pushback, and you know, right. To be quite honest, once they saw the bottom line, it was much easier to sell it year after year. And then we started bringing on sponsors who were very interested in supporting it. I mean, we had some national sponsorship. We started getting PR from not just local publications, but from regional, then national, then even international publications. So when you start getting that kind of support, listen, it's hard to say no to that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm listening to the arc of what happened and taking whatever listeners of this might think is controversial, but looking at it from the intelligent business that the hotel did, you did a pilot, you learned something.
Yeah.
You took that learning and you took it to the next level and continued to build on it. And the bottom line proof concept, and because of the profitability of it, even if there were a few guests that were offset or upset and wouldn't come back because of it, there's five of those to the 600 who became profitable. And I imagine people buying drinks at that party probably spent more money than had it been a different kind of a pool party.
Per capita, absolutely. They spent a whole lot more than they would have, because you know, obviously it's that party vibe, everybody's into it, you know, one drink turns into two or three or four, sometimes more. It really became, you know, at the bottom line of this event every year. It wasn't hard to sell it each year after that. So, and the spot, what was interesting too, of course, you know, those first couple of years seeking sponsorship. Well, then after that, the sponsors came to us and said, how do we become a part of this? And local organizations would reach out to us and say, look, we'd love to sponsor, or we'd love to purchase a cabana that day. Can we have a presence there? And we always wanted to support the local groups, obviously Beyond Pride, who had a regular presence there every week or every other week. There were other smaller groups here in Vegas and even from California and other areas in the region who just wanted to bring their group and have fun at the event. So that became important to me, that we allowed, that we made it possible for those groups to have a presence, especially if they had. Sin City Sisters is a great example of a group that helps individuals with suffering from HIV/AIDS here. And, you know, not a lot of, they didn't have sponsorship money. They didn't have a lot to contribute, but I felt it was important that they have a presence at the event to support an upcoming event that they had going on. So I said, take a cabana, bring your signage, get out there with your flyers, talk to people. You know, you're going to have 500, 600, 700 guests today. Hit your market while you're here. And they would.
Let's talk about it a little bit from a branding perspective. So the brand of this chain who may not have had this in the past is now out to the community saying, we embrace diversity, we embrace giving, and we're part of the community. How did that turn into for them a way that didn't distract from people who might have had opposition to those types of events? Do you think that the offset from what you did any damage at all to the growth of the hotel, or was it really mostly high positive situation?
It was high positive because I will tell you that in general, our feedback from hotel guests, even hotel guests that weren't interested, were not part of that market, didn't want to come to the event, would still comment on, boy, they looked like they were having a lot of fun. What a great property this is. what a great hotel this was. There was a, you know, we would see social comments, or we would receive emails about, you know, our family stayed there for the weekend, and boy, there was such a fun party going on at the pool next to ours. We wanted to go over there. And we had a lot of hotel guests, heterosexual couples, who would come up and say, "What's going on here?" And we would tell them, or actually they would just come up and say, "Yeah, we want to go to the party." And we'd say, "Well, FYI, it is an LGBT focused party. Oh, we don't care about that. Can we go? Are we allowed in?" Yeah. And of course we would say, "Of course you're allowed in." So we had a huge group of heterosexual folks that would come to the party every week, or brilliant hotel guests that would just want to be part of the party. And I think that really lent to our success was, listen, let's face it. When you think of a gay pool party, you're thinking hot guys in tight Speedos, or at least I am.
Not so much.
Well, all right. But I mean, that's the reality of it, right? But our event welcomed everyone. And it was my goal, and all of our goal, to make everyone feel very comfortable there. So it didn't matter who you were, what your body type was, what you wore. That didn't matter. Just come to the event. Mm-hmm. And have a good time. And we didn't tolerate anything but that. So if anyone made another guest feel uncomfortable in any way, and it didn't matter gay, straight, or whatever, they were asked to leave, because we wanted everyone. I remember, I don't know what year it was, maybe 2015. There's a national group of individuals. It's the big gay men's group, and they are plus size gentlemen who had a conference every year, and they picked our hotel, whatever year it was, and they stayed with us, and they wanted to come to the pool party. And I said, great. So they rented cabanas and they hung out all day. And I will tell you, I thought, boy, I talked a lot with their group organizers, and I said, look, I want you guys to be comfortable. If anything happens, I want you to tell me immediately and we will address it. I'm telling you, they were the most popular group of guys, and I loved it. They had a blast. Everybody had a blast with them. And it was so rewarding to see what a welcoming environment had been created by our other guests.
I love that. I think
it was just beautiful.
You just led me into the next question that I had. This is about the economics of it. So we know from what we've already said that it was, people were drinking and buying and enjoying and all of it. Let's talk about the secondary. What, in terms of value to a hotel, what is it worth when an event can draw, for example, a group from another state where, you know, 80 people come, or say a wedding, a same-sex wedding that wants to happen in a hotel.
Absolutely.
How much of an impact was that great core idea in terms of how it multiplied for profits across other areas of the hotel?
Oh, absolutely. It had impact. You know, our convention group booked a lot of LGBT groups. So you're selling convention space, you're selling F&B.
Food and beverage?
Food and beverage, Okay. And, you know, that made it even easier to continue to grow the event and talk about the event. And, you know, we really did become that hotel. And I would say it probably still is known as a very welcoming, an LGBT friendly hotel. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of became the place. Now, I will tell you that towards the last couple of years, there started to be a little more concern about, gosh, people are calling us the gay hotel.
Interesting.
I said, well, are they really? And so what? I think people understand that it's a gay friendly hotel. Mm-hmm. It's not an all gay hotel. So I think your arguments are a little unfounded. And that kind of went away pretty quickly after we had a clear several discussions about it. But I thought it was kind of funny that people did refer to it as the gay hotel, but it was, people understood it was gay friendly. It did extend beyond just the pool deck, like you're saying. I mean, it extended into, you know, where guests would say, gosh, I felt my partner and I felt really comfortable and safe and welcomed when we checked in. Walking around the casino, we felt safe. We enjoyed our time in the restaurant, the way, you know, the server made us feel like we belonged. You know, and that was super important to me.
Yeah. I mean, one of the keys to marketing is when you meet people at their model of the world and how you do business, so that you, we always talk about, it's all about creating advocates for your brand and every touch that your company makes. So the story is brilliant. We're kind of near the end of the time. I always ask this question. Is there something I should have asked you about your work or otherwise that would enhance what we've been talking about? Something I forgot to ask?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's anything you should ask me. I would just say, I hope that even though I may not be at that with that company anymore, I would hope that someone picks up the mantle for an event of that nature, because it really did so much, I think, for not only the company and the property, but for the community. And I think after what we've been through in the last year, that market is very hungry right now for a summer of fun and enjoyment and being with friends. And I hope that everyone can get vaccinated and get into a place where they feel comfortable again, and we can have events like that again. So
yeah,
it's important. Yeah.
If I was running a hotel business and had opportunities for that or any other homogenous group of people to come out and spend money at my pool and bring conventions in, you'd be nuts.
Yeah,
not to make that a reality.
Oh yeah, that market is still there, and they, like you're saying, you know, they're very hungry for something like this, and so there's a lot of opportunities. So hopefully, someone will pick that up and run with it.
I gotta say, I always love hanging out and chatting with you. It's been, I was thinking about it. We've known each other. I think we met in 1984. I think is when
we were 12, 13.
Yeah, I was nine.
I was old man. I was on the playground, I'm sure.
No, we were in this, for people watching, we were in the same dorm in college my freshman year, where we became friends. So it's amazing to be able to meet back up with folks from last century.
Have a conversation. Don't say it like that. It makes me feel even older.
I'm sorry, it's going out to the internet. What was it, the system of tubes? Is that what it said?
Right.
Yeah. So anyhow, thank you so much for coming on. For those of you listening, thanks for listening as usual. We'd love you to click right down below, right here, so you can subscribe. Tell your friends, share the podcast, even send a fax to someone older than us and tell them podcasts exist, and they could also check it out. And we will see you all, or you'll hear us again on the FangleCast coming up. Thanks again.
Brought to you by Fangle Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.